event today, we have Ratmir Timashev. Ratmir is actually in the book, and he has a fabulous, fabulous story. And I wanted to invite him to, chat with us here and share some of the insights and learnings from his journey. Veeam is his second company, if I remember from our prior conversation. He had a successful exit before Veeam, and today, actually, Veeam is almost a $300 million revenue run rate company, but does not have any institutional investor, any external financing. Ratmir and his co-founders have funded the company themselves with about $5 million, but really it has been, beyond that, it has been organically funded. So it's a phenomenal, phenomenal achievement in building a revenue run rate of that scale, and that's what we are going to learn about today in this conversation. Welcome, with Ratmir. It's great to have you here.
Well, thank you for having me, Ramana. Good morning or good afternoon. I know where people are from. I'm in Europe today, so to me it's almost evening. Good evening.
People are everywhere. So people are in the U.S., people are in Europe, people are in India, people are God knows where else. We'll find out in the course of the conversation. So, Ratmir, let's kind of kick off the discussion by giving our audience a bit of a flavor of Veeam. What do you do? And I know what you do today is an evolution of what you started with. So if you could just trace us through a little bit of that evolution of what you started with and where you are today, that would be a great starting point.
Yeah, the company was started in 2006 by me and my partner. He's my technology brilliant partner. So I'm more on the sales and marketing, and he creates the brilliant products. So the company, the idea was let's develop different tools to manage VMware infrastructure, VMware virtual machines. So as probably most of you know that, VMware invented the modern server virtualization technology in early 2000, and in mid 2000, like 2005, 2006, virtualization kind of started to become more mainstream, and a lot of companies started using VMware virtualization. And our idea was to basically leverage this wide adoption of virtualization and develop different tools for VMware administrators to manage this new infrastructure. And the tools would be for SMB customers or medium enterprise or large enterprise, doesn't matter. All these companies, most of them are using VMware. And also they, some of them are starting to use Microsoft Hyper-V as a virtualization platform. So our idea was to develop different tools, but we ended up actually with our flagship product. When we released, originally we developed a few different tools like monitoring, configuration management, reporting, analysis. And then in 2008, at February 2008, so that has been exactly 7 years, we released our backup product for VMware, and that product has become extremely successful. So effectively, we just decided to focus just on the backup for VMware, because backup is the most innovative and the most disruptive technology that could be created using virtualization and modern storage and modern virtualization. So we decided to focus on the backup, and we were absolutely correct. So effectively, backup now generates 95% of our revenue. We still have two management products for historical reasons in our portfolio, but our main flagship product that generates most of our revenue is data protection, and now we call it the market that we have created, we call it availability. So there is an old market, which we call legacy market, which we call backup. So again, we're talking about server backup in data center backup and disaster recovery. And the new market that we created is, we call it availability. Availability is different from the backup that you need basically these days, most of your applications and most of your workloads, servers are mission critical. 10 years ago, only 3% were mission critical. So now you need a solution to be able to recover any IT service, any application within minutes and seconds. And the old legacy approach, which traditional backup standards guarantees the recovery only that is measured in hours and days, and this is totally unacceptable these days. So we created kind of a new industry. We call it availability, but old term would be backup. Backup of modern data centers that are being built on VMware or Microsoft virtualization platform.
So I want to go back to that period between 2006 and 2008 when you were kind of figuring out what is the right opportunity to go after. And you said you had a bunch of different virtualization management and administration tools, and eventually in 2008 you realized that backup, virtualization backup, was the gap in the market, and that's where really the traction, the you know, customer traction was, and you decided to bet the whole company on that. Now, I'd like to understand a bit about that process and you know, highlight that for our entrepreneurs. And I'll tell you what my thought process there is, the reason I want to double-click down on that particular phase. You know, in our research on unicorn companies, the ones that have been able to scale to a, you know, very fast growth and very high valuation level, one thing is very clear, is that positioning, the product positioning of finding a gap and then, you know, aligning with what we call product market fit, but really a significant customer demand in the market, that almost single-handedly determines where that company is going to go. So in your case, your journey of experimenting with different virtualization management tools led up to this virtualization backup as the answer. Can you talk a bit about what went on in that process and how did you get to that answer?
Yeah, sure. By the way, I just wanted to mention one of my favorite books, Inside the Tornado, Crossing the Chasm. I like many ideas in this book, but one idea I like the most is that at different stages when the company is being built, the company has to do things differently, and sometimes it has to do things in the opposite way. So what works in early stage, you have to do the reverse at later stages. So there is a period when you start the company where you have to experiment, you have to be entrepreneur. So you have to be really entrepreneurial, open-minded. So you have to try, you have to do the pivots, you have to try different things. And I've never seen that first original idea for the business would work. Never seen that in the original form. It's always something at the end product, the end result, the end service is always slightly different or a lot different than the original idea. So in early stages, entrepreneurs, they have to experiment. But once they find this golden opportunity and they can smell this gold, then they have to really focus and forget about and really drive that, stay focused. So early days, you experiment, you don't need to focus on one thing, you have to try multiple things. But once you get the feeling that you found this market opportunity, this golden market opportunity, then you have to run as fast as possible in a very focused way.
So Crossing the Chasm by Geoffrey Moore is one of the best positioning books ever written, actually. And if you have not read it and you are trying to do an entrepreneurial business, this is a must read. And this book has been around. It's not a new book. It's quite an old book, actually.
Yes.
But
I
would say it's an evergreen set of lessons that will apply forever in, you know, product marketing and product positioning. And I think you should for sure take a look at it. Now, the other thing that I'm hearing in what you're describing, Ratmir, is something I've heard other people, other entrepreneurs also discuss, is that you kind of need to immerse yourself in customer problems. So whether it is by doing, you know, services for those customers in a specific domain of your interest or selling products, a suite of products in case in your case, Ratmir, you have to kind of achieve customer intimacy somehow so that you can have a ear attached to the customers and hear really, really clearly what is happening, what kinds of issues, what kinds of problems are customers trying to solve. And people who have been able to extract, you know, really serious problems out of, you know, enterprise problems or SMB problems, wherever the customers are, but keeping your ear close to the customers and somehow achieving that through whatever process you go through, whether it is by bringing some products to the market or through services, that's what gives you that window into the customer's world. And that window is vital to open up. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. But, however, there is an opposite side of this. So I always describe that there is this course in the U.S. Called Pragmatic Marketing that teaches you to create an innovative product. Of course, there is no such a course that can teach you to create an innovative product. But that course specifically says that you have to go and listen to the customers. Yeah, I would agree with that. But then there is the second part. Then you have to go into the dark room and apply your common sense, entrepreneurial common sense, to find the elegant solution to that problem, right? Because I haven't seen a single customer who came to Steve Jobs and said, Steve, I need an iPhone. So somehow Steve was able to figure out that he needs to create an iPhone, but none of the customers told him that, Steve, please make me iPhone, right? So, you have to listen to customers, but then you have to go in a thinking period or in a dark room and think really well with how you can are going to solve this customer problem in the most elegant, creative way. And if this problem is really big enough for you to create a new market, so that the problem has to be big for you to create the market. So it's always, I always say that two most difficult things to do in technology business, but in any business, is be at the right place at the right time, that is, create the market or be part of the market that today is small but will be big in the next 5 years, and second is create a brilliant product for that market. So only two things. The rest is easy. Sales, marketing, yeah, you can learn all those, so you can hire the people that know how to do that. But those two things are extremely difficult to do. Find the market and create a brilliant product.
So of those, one is in your hands, kind of, building the brilliant product. So if you have been able to identify what problem you're going to solve and then how you solve it really is your product marketing genius. How you design the product, how, what technology you're going to use, how you address, and the iPhone example is great because iPhone, you know, Steve Jobs understood the need. He understood music very well. He was a passionate music lover, and the iPod was really the beginning of the iPhone. So he understood all that, but the solution that they came out with was their own solution. So in this case, in Veeam's case, you have come up with your own brilliant technology and, you know, product which really addresses the problem. And that's where the entrepreneur's genius kicks in gear, or entrepreneur team's genius kicks in gear. The timing one is very tricky. So how do you get timing right?
Timing, actually, there is a misconception that you have to be the first in the market. I don't think you have to be the first in the market. So you just have to look at the market. So Google wasn't the first in search, right? So, and by the way, we were also not the first during the software to manage VMware infrastructure or doing the backups for VMware virtual machines. We were not the first. There were a couple of other companies that started, but we saw that they're growing very fast, and we kind of understood that this is the hot area. Visualization will be the foundation of the future computing, and the backup is the kind of the area where visualization can be leveraged the most. And we saw these two companies are doing very well, so we came. We were kind of the third one who came, and we created a better product, and we were much more aggressive in sales and marketing. That's how we won. So the timing was good, but we were not the first to the market. We looked at the market. We knew the market. We understood the market. And we created a very, very good product, brilliant product.
So if I parse what you said, you're saying that you can actually take cues from the market. You can look at the market and see who other people have identified certain opportunities, and you can come in as a, you know, second, third, fourth product in the market and still execute, out-execute your competition. And by the way, this is a storyline that I heard in the context of Tom Siebel when he was doing Siebel Systems. There were actually, I think, like 15 or 20 CRM companies when Siebel was founded. But obviously, Siebel Systems out-executed most of them to become the leader. Eventually, you know, Salesforce.com came into existence and toppled them from that position. And today, that's a much more interesting company, and Siebel has been acquired by Oracle. But in its days, in the first wave of CRM, Siebel was not the first company at all. It was one of the 20 companies, and it just simply out-executed everybody else.
Right.
So switching gears a bit, Ratmir, you have chosen to build this company without any outside financing, and you have so far, you know, maintained full control over the company. Can you talk about your thought process on what you're trying to do, why those decisions, et cetera?
I'm not advocating to build a company without venture capitalists. It's just because this is our second company. We made all the mistakes and learned how to build a successful software business when we were building our first company. And at the first company, we did have outside investors, inside venture partners, a great VC firm out of New York. So we learned a lot from them, and they taught us a lot how to build a company, how to build sales, marketing, how to sell the company. They helped us to sell the company and get the great value. And so when we were building the second company, we really didn't need outside advisors, partners. Still, we decided to partner with inside venture partners second time because they're just good strategic partner, and they help us to identify the adjacent markets where we can grow, because we are growing very fast, but we're kind of saturating our market because we're already pretty large size. You mentioned that this year we will be close to $500 million in revenue bookings. So we need to find adjacent markets, and inside is a great term that helped us. Again, VC help you with different things. We don't need most of the things these days. We don't need money. We don't need help with sales or marketing. We don't need the validation or credibility. We have all that VC normally brings. But we still need the VC for help us identify the next hot market adjacent to where we can expand.
But you brought Insight in much later in the game, right? You were already doing very serious revenues. What was your revenue threshold before you brought Insight in?
We brought Insight about a year and a half ago. We already were over $200 million in revenue. And it wasn't a classical VC deal. Insight did not put money in the company. It's just me and my partner. We sold a small portion of our shares to Insight so that they will be on our board, and they will be a shareholder and strategic partner. So it's not a classical VC. They did not put money in the company because the company is very profitable and very cash flow positive.
So you just basically took some liquidity for the founders and wanted to bring them in as shareholders so that you can use their network and deal flow to understand the adjacencies of your market to figure out where you go from a product strategy point of view.
Exactly.
And where, when you look at that product strategy, when you look at that ecosystem, how is your ecosystem evolving, and where do you see yourselves going outside, you know, beyond the virtualization backup market?
We see ourselves growing into overall data management. The data is growing exponentially. Gartner says that the data is growing 30-50% annually. So people and businesses need to manage the data. They need not only backup data, but they also need to be able to recover quickly within minutes and seconds. They need to archive data. They need to reduce data. They need to deduplicate data. They need to analyze data. There is a broader market that we operate in, broader than just the backup and recovery. So Gartner estimates that our market, backup and recovery, is around $6 billion, growing approximately 10% annually. And of course, we are growing much faster. We are growing 40%. That means we are taking market share from our competitors. But the bigger market is the data management market, which is estimated at $16 billion by Gartner. So we still see a lot of areas where we can expand just outside of virtualization backup. But again, virtualization is the foundation of the modern data center and the foundation of the cloud computing. And we see a lot of opportunities in developing more products and more services around cloud, cloud backup, and cloud data management. And we see that this is a great area for us to innovate and create more products and more services that we can sell through our channel.
And are you forecasting, so if you look at your current valuation, have you, you know, the last round of financing, did it already hit the $1 billion mark? Are you already a unicorn? I can imagine with $500 million in bookings now, you're definitely a unicorn level valuation. Was your last round of funding already at unicorn levels?
Yeah, it was close, yes. It was close to that. And by the way, we have a goal to grow to $1 billion in revenue in 4 years from today. So by the end of 2018, we are planning to be $1 billion in revenue company. So definitely the valuation is probably over a billion. I mean, comparable companies, there are a few good companies that are public with comparable financials, such as Splunk and SolarWinds and a couple of others like FireEye. So those are very companies with comparable growth and comparable profitability and revenue, and they are, of course, valued at several billion dollars.
Yeah. And are you planning to – so you're not going to wait till you hit $1 billion in revenues to go public. You would likely go public soon, or are you going to wait?
We don't have plans to go public.
You don't have any plans to go
public? We are not sure. Yeah, we're not sure if we want to go public ever.
Well, so if you have VCs in the deal, how do you not go public? You have to give them an exit.
We have structured the deal in a very creative way because they are my friends, and so basically they do get the liquidity without us selling the company or going public.
Tell us more.
It's a very creative. We just pay them dividends. So they get their money back.
A VC firm is willing to accept a dividend deal? I've never heard this before.
Insight is very creative. Insight Venture Partners are very creative.
Wow. So this is something to make note of because it's an issue I've written about quite a lot because, you know, our
goal
is...
It's a big issue.
It's a very big issue. And our whole industry is obsessed with exits.
So absolutely.
I've written about, you know, several entrepreneurs who don't believe in exit. They don't want to exit. They don't want to deal with the crap that the public market has to, you know, showers on entrepreneurs. Basically, if you're running a public company or on the board of a public company, it's really a nightmare. The amount of regulation, the amount of reporting requirements, and blah blah blah, audits and so forth. It's really a nightmare. So a number of entrepreneurs I have talked to actually have avoided the path of venture capital, actually, so that they don't have to go public and they don't have to deal with all that nonsense. However, in most of their cases, and in most of the industry, actually, VCs are not willing to do dividend deals. And you have here structured a dividend deal with Insight Venture Partners. That is a very unique perspective.
Yes, absolutely. Until we structured that deal, I also was thinking exactly like you that none of the VCs will do this kind of deal because they need the exit. And I said, maybe I don't want to sell the company even in 10 years. So I don't want to have the pressure from the VCs. That's why we were not looking for VCs. But Insight was very creative, and Insight has been talking to me because they're good friends of mine for the last 15 years because they were investors in and very successful investors in our previous company. So I thought that it's not possible also, but turns out to be you just have to think out of the box and be creative. And actually, I talked to another VC firm. I don't want to name the name, but it's a top VC firm in Silicon Valley, and they said they would do the same deal as Insight if we would like. So there are VC firms that are willing to be open-minded.
All right, this is a new.
If they really want,
This is a very cutting-edge, a very new development actually that VCs are starting to think dividends. I think it would be good if investors start thinking dividends more, because one of the earlier conversations here, those of you in the audience, some of you may recall, we had a conversation with Shomit Ghosh from Onset Ventures a few months ago, and we had this discussion that in 2013, 70,000 startups were angel financed, and only 1,000 companies a year get venture capital. So there are this, like, you know, 69,000 companies probably who have not received any follow-on financing, but many of them, and some of them, a lot of them probably are going to die in the vine because they will not be able to validate and so forth, but there will be a pool of companies in there who should be able to grow organically, you know, through customer revenues, just like you have done most of your growth. And for that class of companies, because they already have some amount of angel financing, working out dividend models may be the best way to go for a while, because a lot of these companies turn out to be niche companies. Maybe they'll be $5 million, $10 million, $20 million companies. They're not venture financeable often, but they can be solid businesses, and dividend is a very good way to compensate investors in that model. All right.
That's right. As long as you can build a profitable business so that you can pay dividends.
Very good. So thank you, Ratmir. It was definitely a revealing conversation. Thank you for sharing.